Hello, and welcome to the latest ClearBridge podcast. This is Jeff Schulze, CFA, Head of Economic and Market Strategy at ClearBridge Investments. ClearBridge is a global equity manager with $177 billion in assets under management, committed to delivering long-term results through authentic active management. It's April Fool's Day, and the recent performance of the largest stocks in the market may have investors wondering if 2023 was a fluke or if a collection of these companies dubbed the Magnificent Seven have staying power. Several of these behemoths, which include Apple, Amazon, Google, Microsoft, Meta, NVIDIA, and Tesla, are beginning to show some cracks. Tesla has struggled so much, in fact, that some are calling the remaining group the Super Six. Joining me today for a checkup on the Mag Seven are Naveen Jayasundaram, ClearBridge's Senior Analyst for Internet and Media, and Anuj Parikh, Analyst for Technology Hardware. Naveen and Anuj, welcome back to the virtual podcast booth. I look forward to your thoughts on separating the hype from reality in this group in today's podcast. Are megacaps still magnificent? Anuj, Naveen, thank you so much for being here. I have been looking forward to this podcast for a couple of months, as our listeners have been as well. So really appreciate you jumping on here and giving us some perspective.
Thanks for having us, Jeff. Happy to be here.
Thanks for having me.
And the Magnificent Seven has had a tremendous run really since this bull market began back in October of 2022. And to illustrate the magnitude to which this group has grown, the Magnificent Seven now makes up almost the same weight in the MSCI ACWI Global Index as all of the equities in Japan, the UK, Canada, France, and China combined. And to put those countries in context, China has the second world's largest GDP. Japan's the third largest, the UK, sixth largest, followed by France and Canada at 7 and 9. So these are top 10 countries. So the Magnificent Seven stocks are really acting as countries when it comes to their market cap and their profitability. So this has been a run that not many people saw coming. But in order to talk about where we're going, I think it helps to talk about how we got here. So Naveen, I want to talk about how the Magnificent Seven really progressed through 2023. What was the driver of that trend? And maybe more importantly, was this outperformance really justified?
Sure. Thank you, Jeff. So I would say that there have been three major factors behind the outperformance of the Mag 7 starting from early 2023. So the first is just that these companies have a rare combination of secular above market growth as well as free cash flow generation. Free cash flow and generation particularly got better over the course of the year as these companies push for greater efficiency in how they operate. And they were able to do that just because of the scale that they have in their respective industries. The poster child of this is perhaps Meta, which laid off 13% of its workforce in early 2023, but was still actually able to accelerate top line as the year progressed, which was just really incredible. The second major driver was that these seven companies are clear beneficiaries of advancements in artificial intelligence and Gen AI in particular. So if you look at Microsoft, Google, and Amazon, they play across all layers of the tech stack behind Gen AI, all the way from the silicon and compute infrastructure to foundational language models and applications. And with the vast amount of proprietary data that these businesses have access to, the market also realized early on that these companies' position in AI will likely only get stronger over time. And then the third and perhaps smaller factor is that these companies actually meaningfully underperformed the market in 2022 due to fears of rising interest rates. So some, definitely not all, definitely not the majority, but some of the 2023 performance was attributable to oversold conditions entering the year.
Yeah, a lot of people forget that the sell-off in 2022, the Magnificent Seven stocks really took it on the chin. And I mean, you mentioned superior earnings growth, and maybe put some numbers around that. Coming into 2023, after kind of that really tough year for the Mag 7, consensus forecast for earnings growth for the group was 10% in aggregate. And last year, they delivered 34% earnings growth, right? So really surpassed that low bar. But I think maybe more importantly, when you look at the broader equity universe, and particularly smaller cap companies, their earnings have been relatively lackluster. Last year, the S&P 493, when you strip out those Magnificent Seven stocks. Their earnings growth is negative 4%. Russell 2000, which is a proxy for small caps, was negative 13%. So obviously, you know, a big move of this higher, as you alluded to, Naveen, was fundamentally driven by superior earnings growth. But I think maybe as we look forward, I think one of the more important things are ascertaining what expectations are embedded into these stocks. Can they maintain their leading share in their respective industries? And Anuj, you're focused on the area that everybody likes to talk about, which is hardware and semis. And the stock that is the biggest stock of the Magnificent Seven by many, which is NVIDIA. Obviously, a tremendous run over the last couple of years. Are you concerned at all about maybe some of the over-exuberance that investors have in NVIDIA? Or, you know, with the recent results, does it actually validate the valuation that's embedded into that stock? What are your expectations going forward?
Hey, Jeff. I totally agree. You know, NVIDIA has been at the epicenter of the whole AI theme. And I would say there are valid concerns around the sustainability of growth for NVIDIA, given one, there's high customer concentration in the data center segment with an estimated 80% of revenue coming from a handful of key customers, including Microsoft, Meta, Amazon, Google, Oracle, and a few others. Number two, spend on AI infrastructure is already eclipsing 50% of total global cloud CapEx spend. And then three, supply has been ramping steadily over the course of the year, not only in terms of wafers and the actual chips that are produced, but also advanced packaging that kind of enables these very complex hardware solutions to be made. On the other hand, fundamentals are very supportive of NVIDIA valuation in the near to medium term. Number one, the industry backdrop is very constructive. We've seen a clear acceleration in cloud CapEx spend and AI server demand. Cloud CapEx growth is accelerating to high teens or potentially greater from less than 5% in 2023. And then expectations for data center compute revenue this year of around $100 billion or so imply AI servers have already reached over 25% of the total server mix. And that was less than 5% 4 years ago. Number two, NVIDIA is already generating 40% of data center revenue from inference, which highlights already strong progress around monetization. And we've heard this from other companies like Broadcom, where CEO Hock Tan has mentioned consumer internet companies are already seeing very strong ROI from AI investments, and in fact, doubling down on AI infrastructure. Number three, we're continuing to see share gains. So in certain workloads, such as recommendation systems, which are heuristic-based machine learning algos utilized by the likes of Meta, Pinterest, and other social media platforms to improve ad relevancy to users, they primarily ran on CPUs, but the transition to deep learning-based recommender systems became too compute-intensive for CPUs and allowed for substantial share gains for GPUs, which are kind of in the pole position for AI. Over the last 5 to 6 years, in fact, Pinterest converted majority of their recommendation system infrastructure to run on GPUs from using predominantly CPUs before. And then last but not least, there's two major new product cycles NVIDIA will benefit from later this year, the H200 and B100 chips. And I believe these have widened NVIDIA's moat on AI hardware, where the improvement in training and inference performance and thus costs for customers is coming down massively. And the ASP uplift on these chips versus the current product generation is estimated to be 30% to almost as high as 100%. And so I'm very constructive in the near to medium term. However, the current valuation does embed a lot in terms of growth, and we do kind of need to monitor for the risk of an air pocket, I would say, over the next few years.
Well, nothing goes straight up into the right? There's always going to be air pockets, even in some of the best growth stocks that you've seen throughout history. But it certainly sounds like there are a lot of good things going for NVIDIA, especially with those two new product launches. Naveen, I'm going to come back over to you because you're a busy man. You cover a bulk of the Magnificent Seven names and Meta, Amazon, Google, and Microsoft. I'm sure during earnings season, you don't get a lot of sleep, but can talk a little bit about the primary themes that have been driving those four stocks in particular, and maybe more importantly, what are the key drivers for each of them as you kind of look out over the next 12 to 18 months?
Sure. So yeah, it's certainly been an interesting year, one where I've learned a lot as an investor. I would say that each of these companies have slightly different drivers of both revenue and earnings entering 2024. So definitely wouldn't paint them with the same brush. So let's start with maybe Meta. So Meta continues to be the clearest year-on-year share gainer in online advertising, which is their core business, on a dollars added basis. And this is happening from years of investment in AI-based recommendations, which Anuj alluded to in a short-form video through Reels, where they're actually further ahead than YouTube Shorts, and more recently in Gen AI. And these drivers, which are enabling Meta to grow faster than the online ad market, largely look poised to continue into this year and likely into 2025 as well. For Amazon, the biggest source of upside surprise has actually been the profitability of their retail business, with margins now exceeding pre-COVID levels. And this is happening despite the company actually registering their fastest ever delivery speeds. While in the past, delivery has actually been an area of investment, or rather speeds have been an area of investment. So it's nice to see both margins and speeds improving at the same time. And when we think about efforts around regionalization, inbound shipping, they still have a few innings left to go in this e-commerce margin improvement story. But I would say that to sustain our performance over the rest of this year, AWS does need to see better growth as the year progresses. So that's still an open question for Amazon. And then on Google, the company has actually underperformed its Mag 7 peers more recently. And this is mainly due to concerns around the company's most profitable business, which is search, losing share to new entrants, and the company's efforts around Gen AI, maybe being, you know, a half notch or half tier behind OpenAI. I think these are valid concerns over the medium term. And the more Google can do to dispel these concerns as the year progresses, I think the better they can do. But to their credit, they have actually improved margins. They continue to deploy a lot of their capital into buybacks. So I believe they can actually have meaningful earnings growth, even if top-line growth is slower than Meta. And then lastly, Microsoft is not a company I cover, but I do follow it somewhat closely. And they've actually had a lead in enterprise cloud when it comes to monetizing Gen AI and the tailwinds that they're seeing there. And they're also opening up new revenue streams with you know, initiatives like Copilot. And seems like their growth story is still has a long way to go.
All right. So it sounds like we've covered a lot of ground with five of the Magnificent Seven stocks, but there's one that we haven't talked about quite yet, which is Apple. Apple is one of two Magnificent Seven stocks that are down year to date, of course, with Tesla being the second one. So obviously having a little bit more of a tough start to the year in 2024 than 2023. Anuj, I want to come back to you for a second. What really disappointed investors in the fourth quarter's earnings release, and what makes you either pessimistic or optimistic on the stock as we kind of look out to the back half of the year?
Sure, Jeff. I would say the narrative on Apple really changed late last year when news surfaced that Huawei was able to produce leading-edge phones and that China has managed to manufacture leading-edge chips domestically and circumvent U.S. export control restrictions. In the latest earnings, the data seemed to feed that bear case because China iPhone revenues were down mid-single digits while the overall iPhone revenue base was up 4% on a constant currency basis. And Apple has said that they expect Huawei to produce 50 million phones this year. And while that might not seem material relative to the, you know, overall smartphone market of, you know, 1.3 to 1.4 billion, this could represent almost 20% of the overall Chinese smartphone market. At the same time, there are multiple reasons to be optimistic on Apple going forward. Number one, iPhone refresh rate is roughly 20%, and most of iPhone demand in a given year is driven by the existing install base of iPhone users upgrading. And the substantial amount of iPhones that were purchased during the pandemic are essentially due for a refresh. It's widely anticipated that Apple will introduce more AI features in the upcoming iOS. And historically, we've seen Apple introduce new features, including Siri and FaceTime, that require new hardware and catalyze an upgrade cycle. That the same could happen for the next iOS, where new AI features are not backward compatible with prior iPhones and only supported by iPhone 16. Furthermore, despite all this negative rhetoric around iPhone demand in China, various checks have suggested that overall iPhone builds haven't seen meaningful negative revisions yet. And recent iPhone demand weakness in China has actually been more of a function of the weak Chinese consumer overall, rather than any indication of significant share loss. And then it's also worth noting that the Chinese smartphone user is very feature sensitive, and some of the weakness year to date could be that this cohort of the iPhone install base is awaiting the iPhone 16, given the anticipated AI features and improved camera, et cetera. And then at the same time, expectations for iPhone revenue growth are quite low at just, 3% over the next 3 years. And, we've also continued to see premium mix shift within iPhone towards more and more consumers buying the Pro models, given better features, better hardware, et cetera. And this could represent another source of upside. The Pro and Pro Max mix of iPhones is estimated to be around 65% in the first half of this year, and that compares to less than 60% in the same time period last year. Also, services have seen accelerating growth in recent quarters with a rebound in App Store and digital advertising, and both those markets are expected to grow low to mid-teens, such that services revenue could continue to surprise positively relative to consensus expectations for 11% revenue growth over the next 3 years. In addition, policy suggests that the DOJ lawsuit and European Commission investigation are unlikely to harm the iPhone franchise, nor materially impair App Store economics, nor the advertising revenue stream. And last but not least, Apple's now trading at less than a 20% premium to the S&P versus its recent peak of 50% and the five-year average of 30% for a business that has very high returns on capital, with the potential for a strong iPhone upgrade cycle and accelerating revenue growth over the next few years.
Well, it sounds like Apple may be a good opportunity after a rough start to 2024. All right, so we mentioned AI adoption and, obviously this being a key theme of the move higher in the Magnificent Seven. The question I have is, where are we in this baseball game? Are we in the very early innings of it, the second or third inning, or are we later in the game where AI is already producing a substantial amount of the revenue and earnings that these companies are ultimately going to see? Naveen, any thoughts?
Sure. So I would say we're generally quite early in the AI wave, not just among the Mag 7, but across the industry. Many experts that I've spoken to actually liken this to the early days of the internet. So think, mid to late 90s, where both the use cases and the potential revenue opportunities were still just being discovered. So when it comes to actually how AI impacts the financials of the Mag 7, the tailwinds today when it comes to revenue are actually fairly small, but they are building. But at the same time, AI is also helping with cost efficiency at many of these companies. So on the cost side, if I were to take Google as an example, they employ roughly 30,000 people in their ad sales unit. And as the company automates how they sell their ads and actually grows adoption of their automated bidding solutions, they're finding ways to be a lot more efficient when it comes to ad sales and might even make some cuts to personnel in this division. Now, maybe taking an example on the revenue side, Meta is just starting to build chatbots using GenAI and integrate them into their messaging applications. So these are WhatsApp and Messenger. And the idea here is to help small and medium-sized businesses communicate and sell directly to their customers at scale in a much more personalized way, despite having very limited employees as an SMB. And if the company could actually pull this off, we should see meaningful revenues start to flow from both WhatsApp and Messenger, even though they are less than 5% of the total revenue of the company today.
Anuj, any thoughts?
From the infrastructure perspective, I still believe we're in the early innings with AI servers expected to represent about a quarter of total server shipments this year. Another way to look at it is NVIDIA founder and CEO Jensen Huang has mentioned many times that the annual data center opportunity from upgrading infrastructure is about $250 billion, and expectations are for NVIDIA data center revenue to be somewhere in the range of $100 billion this year. it is definitely clear that, you know, there's two different sets of customers for AI infrastructure, consumer internet and enterprise. And similar to what Naveen has mentioned earlier, it does seem that the consumer internet customers are much farther along in exploring these investments and generating substantial ROI from these investments than enterprise at this point.
Okay. Sounds like we're in the early innings here. So there's a pretty long runway for AI and the group's prospects together. But, you know, with innovation coming together so quickly and us being in the early stages here, are there any competitive concerns that you have about these companies? Is there a disruptor that could come in and potentially unseat some of these incumbents? Naveen, any thoughts?
Sure. So I'll start off, Jeff, by saying that these companies have some of the widest competitive moats that I've seen. And that's just because they have a combination of immense user data scale when it comes to actual user base. And then they have the talent and deep intellectual property in areas like AI. So it's definitely not very easy to compete against these businesses. But that being said, as investors, we always want to be aware of competition and have a forward-looking view on it. So for Google, for instance, we closely track the traction that ChatGPT is seeing around conversational search. If I look at a company like Amazon, we look on a weekly basis at market share trends in e-commerce, where you've seen companies like Temu spending aggressively to win new users. But the other factors that we also need to look at are, one, are these competitors growing the pie by actually bringing incremental users and new use cases into the market? Or is it a purely kind of, one-for-one competition? And then second, are the unit economics of some of these newer entrants actually healthy, and how do they compare to the incumbent? Because that will ultimately determine how concerned we should be, not just today, but on a multi-year basis over the next few years as we look at some of these new companies.
Now, Anuj, you mentioned regulatory risk before in regards to Apple. Apple and Amazon have both recently been targets of investigations and fines. I mean, do these actions have teeth, or is this kind of just the cost of doing business for larger companies? Anuj, I know you mentioned Apple before. Not too concerned on that front?
I would say policy and antitrust experts that I've spoken to suggest the largest risk actually stems from Apple's resolution around the Epic antitrust lawsuit from a few years ago, rather than the DOJ lawsuit that has come out recently, or the European Commission investigation into the Digital Markets Act violations. So Apple decided to offer a 27% commission for using outside payment methods on the App Store, as opposed to the up to 30% when using Apple's payment system. And this was a clear, you know, frustration for Epic and other software companies that have apps on the App Store, as it isn't really a meaningful cut to the commission. And there is a hearing scheduled by the end of this month by Judge Gonzalez, and this is also being contested in Europe, with a conclusion likely in the next 6 to 12 months. However, the recent DOJ lawsuit doesn't seem to be as much of a regulatory threat, in that Apple has a plausible defense around its better integration of services, App Store and peripherals with its iPhone, leading to a favorable security and privacy outcome for consumers. We haven't heard of many data breaches in the iOS platform. With respect to the European Union Digital Markets Act violations, this also seems to be manageable for Apple, principally given European App Store accounts for less than 10% of the total App Store revenue and less than 50 basis points of Apple's total revenue. However, we will be closely monitoring any sort of updates and outcomes around the App Store Commission related to the Epic antitrust lawsuit appeal and the investigation in Europe.
Naveen, anything on the Amazon front?
Yeah, so I'll keep it fairly brief because we could certainly talk about regulation for the whole of the podcast. But I'd say the Digital Markets Act in Europe is perhaps the most stringent set of regulations that we've seen targeting big tech broadly. But I also look at how, at the end of the day, these companies add a lot of value to end consumers. They create a ton of employment, both directly and indirectly, and are actually quite indispensable to small and medium businesses. So while we see regulation as an important risk to monitor, I do not necessarily see it as an existential threat, whether to Amazon or the other companies that I cover here.
And the last thing I'll mention, obviously, we have the election year coming up here. You guys had covered, you know, some of the vulnerability from an antitrust perspective. And obviously, it doesn't matter if you have unity in the White House and Congress. A lot of regulatory actions can be done by the president on their own. But one other uncertainty that's out there is regarding trade policy. President Trump, if he does get elected for a second term, hinted at a potential 60% levy on Chinese goods imports, which would be up from around 19% currently, and the potential for a 10% tariff on all non-Chinese imports affecting all of our major trade partners. So if that does potentially occur, and again, we're a long way from Election Day and things can change, there may be tariffs put on goods for U.S. companies. And as a group, the Magnificent Seven does have a much higher proportion of revenues outside of the U.S. than the broader S&P 500 universe. But again, this is early days. This could be a reason why you have some choppiness and ultimately creating an opportunity for long-term investors to move into some of these names that we've talked about should that volatility come to fruition. So we've talked about the risks. We've talked about the opportunities. I want to close here on a question that may or may not be fair to both of you, but wanted to get your perspective. You know, as we look out on the horizon, are there any stocks that you see out there that has an opportunity to be part of the Mag 7? I know it's going to be a new name. Other stocks join the Magnificent 7, but any stocks that really it could be a much larger market cap in a much broader company as we look out over the next 5 years? Naveen, I'll start with you.
Sure. So before I actually talk about a specific company, I think it's maybe more helpful to think about the attributes of a company that will likely make this jump from, you know, being in the few hundred billion market cap to actually being quite a bit larger. So I'd say there's a few things I would look for. So first, definitely scale matters a whole lot in my space. So definitely would look for companies that are clear leaders in a large and underpenetrated addressable market. So that's number one. Second would be around the competitive moat. And the more multidisciplinary it can be, the better. So if competitive moat spans technology, network effects, user base, it's just that much harder for other companies to compete against these businesses. And then the third would be competent management that's actually investing for the long term and not just maximizing near-term returns and cash flow. So if we were to take an example, I think Uber is actually a company that seems to fit the bill on all three of these criteria. Obviously, they're well below even $500 billion in market cap today. So it would take quite a long time of continuing to compound earnings and cash flow for them to get there. But, you know, in my mind, that's an example of a company that definitely has the promise or at least fits some of the checklist to get there.
So similar to Naveen, I would say that the criteria that I would look for is that has, you know, worked for companies in my space to be part of the Mag 7, including Apple and Nvidia. One, having a platform-based strategy across, you know, software and hardware. Number two, a durable moat in terms of technology and IP around its products and services. And three, I would say, you know, management has proven to be strong capital allocators. And I would say Broadcom is the company that comes to mind that could potentially be a part of the Mag 7 in the future. The business is actually now shaping up to be an enterprise infrastructure platform with their recent acquisition of VMware that has completely transformed its business to being almost 50-50 software and hardware. They're still in the pole position in terms of AI networking and also benefit from AI custom chip market, which will continue to have a place in AI hardware. And Hock Tan has proven to be an incredible CEO and has delivered substantial value to shareholders over multiple decades. And I believe VMware is the kind of the latest example of that in terms of a shrewd acquisition that also continues to offer upside relative to expectations for the stock.
Well, Nuj and Naveen, I'm going to have you back on the podcast here in a couple of years to see if the Magnificent Seven does have a couple of new stocks that have joined the mega cap status after a number of years of compounding favorably. And I just want to leave the listeners with this particular nugget, is that after behaving fairly monolithically in 2023, with the Mag 7 viewed by many as impenetrable, If you look at the performance this year of the Mag 7, you've had a substantial divergence, with three of the seven underperforming the S&P 500 in the first quarter, two being outright negative. And for those unfamiliar with the term, origin of the term Magnificent Seven, it actually came from a movie where Yul Brynner, back in 1960, led a bunch of gunslingers, seven of them, into a shootout, and only three of them survived. And obviously, after this conversation, it's very unlikely that any of these companies are going to suffer that same dire fate, because these are strong companies with big moats and then a huge addressable market as we look out. I think it's really important for an investor to be able to ascertain what expectations have been embedded into each of these stocks and its attainability. And it's going to be paramount to be able to do that as we move forward. If you put that differently, after a tremendous run by the Mag 7, they become the Divergent 7 and create some concentration risk in the S&P 500. And we believe that active managers that can effectively evaluate these risks are going to have a nice competitive advantage. So with that being said, Naveen, Anuj, thank you again for jumping on the podcast here with me. I know I've personally learned quite a bit, and I know that our listeners have as well. So thank you so much for sharing your perspective and knowledge.
Thank you, Jeff. Really enjoyed the conversation.
Thanks, Jeff. I appreciate the time.
Thank you, everybody, for listening. We hope that you'll continue to join us through 2024. As always, we welcome any questions, comments, and suggestions, which you can email to us at podcast@clearbridge.com. I hope everybody has a great spring, and we hope to see you back here soon. Take care. Please note the following. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. The opinions and views expressed in today's podcast are of the individual speakers as of April 1st, 2024, and may differ from other managers or the firm as a whole, and are not intended to be a forecast of future events, a guarantee of future results, or investment advice. Any statistics referenced have been obtained from sources believed to be reliable, but the accuracy and completeness of this information cannot be guaranteed. Neither ClearBridge Investments nor its information providers are responsible for any damages or losses arising from any use of this information.